Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Daebak Podcast, where we do a deep dive into the classic Korean dramas that have won over generations of fans across decades and around the world. Today, we're discussing Coffee Prince, the 2010 drama that made Gang Yu an international star. I'm one of your hosts, Alisa, also known as Bollywood Newbie on Twitter, and I'm joined by Melanie of Pardesi Reviews on YouTube. Say hi, Melanie.
Hi, I'm Melanie, and I review all sorts of Indian cinema on my YouTube channel, Pardesi Reviews.
We're also joined by Vicky of Vicky's World, also on YouTube.
Hi.
And Catherine of totallyfilmy.com.
Hi, everyone.
So I am so excited that we're all here today and getting to do this. We talk about films and shows on Twitter all day long, but it's always a joy to come in and actually speak virtually face-to-face about these things that we love. I'd like everyone to start out by telling us how you got into Korean dramas in the first place. And I'll start because my origin story is very simple and cliched, which is that I started watching during the pandemic shutdown, and it was crash landing on you, like millions of other people who've just recently fallen in love with Korean dramas. And I've just been binging them ever since. So very typical story. And Vicky, tell me how you got into it.
So my sisters used to watch them, and they used to just hammer me down every time to watch them because I was more on the Indian. I just watched, you know, mainly Indian content. And so finally they wore me down, and Boys of a Flower was the first one for me. I saw Lee Min Ho, and I heard Almost Paradise, and I just was in this new world that I didn't know existed. And ever since then, it's been a journey. So it's been about a year, going on to a year and a half. And yeah, it's been interesting.
Very cool. And you brought up something important, which is that all of us on this podcast started out as Indian or Bollywood movie lovers first before we segued into Korean dramas. And I actually think that's also a typical path for people to find the drama. Who wants to go next? Melanie?
I'll go next. Another person, a friend of ours on Twitter Kathy, who has the site Access Bollywood, kept posting about K-pop and K-drama things. And I asked her for a suggestion. So my first one, I remember it was like fall of 2019, I saw Oh My Ghost or Oh My Ghostess, which was awesome. But I didn't, the craze really started with Crash Landing on You, like everybody else. I watched it during the pandemic. Netflix was heavily serving it to us. And now if you looked at my Netflix screen, it's all either Indian content or Korean, Korean content that it's recommending to me because it knows me so well. And there's something, you know, I said that I started watching Indian films because Western cinema wasn't giving me what I wanted. It wasn't giving me romantic stories. It wasn't giving me musicals. And while Korean dramas aren't musicals, the soundtracks are so integral and important to the dramas. And we have the female gaze. We have often female-centric stories, and it's always a love story. And I, you know, that's what I respond to. You know, we're not the only ones, but yeah, Crash Landing on You was the one that just really set off the craze for me, and it's been nonstop since then.
Yep. And then Catherine, who's like the OG here because she's been watching these for a while.
Yeah, and for me, it's quite funny to have seen my two areas of interest, which are K-dramas and Malayalam language films from the south of India and Kerala. When I first started watching Malayalam language films. It was around 2010. And I would be out there on Twitter going, watch this film, watch this film, watch this film, like out into the void. And then watched everybody all of a sudden grab onto these films. And now it's like everywhere. And I saw the same thing happen with K-dramas. I was probably the newbie around 2012 when a whole bunch of people in the Indian blogging community had been watching them for a while, because we had, like, at that point we had Drama Fever had been around since what, 2007 or so. And I sort of would watch people post about this, and I said, okay, which one should I start with? And almost everybody said, you have to watch Arang and the Magistrate. So I said, okay. And I watched Arang and the Magistrate, and I fell in love, and I have never looked back. Mm-hmm. And that is the only drama I have ever purchased all the DVDs on, because I thought, if I can never watch this again, if it disappears from streaming, I will be sad. And the two stars of that, Shin Min Ah and Lee Joon Gi, have been among my top house faves since that time as well. But it's been really interesting that the number of people now talking about Crash Landing on You has been, it's been phenomenal to watch that.
Yeah. I think the shutdown has so much to do with it, because people were suddenly home with nothing to do and binging streaming content. And there's been this explosion of, you know, well, in the US, we would say international content industries outside of Hollywood are suddenly coming to the consciousness of the West. And yeah, it is really exciting to witness that going on.
Well, and for a while too, I mean, we lost Drama Fever because it got bought out and shut down.
For people who don't know, Drama Fever was the primary streaming service that was available to watch Korean dramas on for a while.
Alongside, right? Viki.com.
Alongside Viki, which still exists, yes.
Which still exists. And prior to the last couple of years, streaming services like Netflix really hadn't picked up very many dramas. So dovetailing with the pandemic, we also have suddenly these big streaming platforms picking up the dramas as well and making them even more accessible.
Right, right.
And showing them as they air in Korea, which is the way Crash Landing on You was. I mean, I kind of caught up with it, but people were watching along, you know, instead of it being something that had aired and then was reshown on Netflix, it was airing at the same time.
It's been really interesting though to see this, because like I've been reading about this, and of course Korean content or culture, however you want to put it, has been exported first to Asia, and this was in the early 2000s, which is part of what they call the Hallyu wave, which I'm sure Catherine could speak about much better than I can. But, you know, it's sort of been this expanding universe. So it started out first going to China and Japan, and then kind of working its way through Indonesia and then into India. And now, if for the first time, it's really hit the West with BTS, you know, with Gangnam Style being a hit. So it's really exciting to kind of like witness that, you know, as people. And it's an interesting thing too, because like, Korean culture isn't necessarily all that accessible. It's weird. Like as I'm learning more about it, I'm both intrigued and surprised in a way that it has caught on the way it has. Because I do think there's a learning curve to like learning about tropes and cultural things with Korean dramas, that, you know, things are like, why does that happen? Or why does this theme keep coming up over and over again? But for whatever reason, it's caught fire and people are really, really into it. And so even though I am very new to all this, I decided to start this podcast. and the reason why is because when you're a newbie, when you're starting out and you go on Reddit or you go on Twitter and you go, I want to learn more about Korean dramas, what do I watch? And there are certain dramas that get recommended to you over and over and over again, right? And you know, for me, the three that kept getting recommended over and over and over again were Coffee Prince, which is what we're going to be discussing today. And then My Lovely Samsung, because Hyun Bin is in it and he was in Crash Landing on You. And then the third one is Boys Over Flowers, which is just, you know, this an iconic and cracked out drama that gets recommended over and over again. And I started, and actually as a new viewer, I was really enthralled by these older dramas in a way more than the newer ones. And I started thinking about, well, what makes a classic drama? You know, what is it about these things that makes that people fans of them over and over again, even though these are dramas that are 15 years old or older.
One thing that's captivating, and we've discussed this on Twitter, is that it seems like the censorship rules are a little bit different now because they are sending so much of this content to other parts of Asia, which are even more conservative than South Korea. We get much more of the fish-eyed kiss kind of situations instead of, and so some of the older dramas can feel a little bit more passionate, which is refreshing too, if you've been watching newer content.
And realer, let's just say more realistic. They exist in the real world in a lot of ways, not just like that in terms of sex, but as in sex exists in these dramas. But also because like a lot of them were filmed on the streets and people are sweaty and, you know, it's not like now where they use the smoothing tool in post-production to make everybody look like they have flawless skin. It's just got a different, the older dramas have a really different feel than the newer ones. And I like it. I like that kind of the raw earth feel of the older dramas.
It's definitely something you get from Coffee Prince. I mean, part of it is that we have a heroine who's never wearing makeup.
That's right. You know? That's right. And that's actually a really good segue, Melanie. I just wanted to do like a quick, you know, key facts about Coffee Prince, which is the drama that we're going to be discussing today. It was made in 2007. And it tells the story of Eun-chan, a young woman who pretends to be a man in order to get a job, and her romance with Hangyul, a rich young man who falls in love with her despite not knowing she's actually a woman. This was a massive hit. It had ratings of about 25 to 30% of the Korean population. And it was also key to launching the Hallyu wave, which I mentioned earlier, in terms of being a pan-Asian hit and making Gong Yoo a pan-Asian star. And it's, again, as I said, it's really popular today even. People recommend it to you over and over and over again when you're a new viewer. And I just kind of wanted to give a shout out to whoever cast the show, who the casting director was, right? Because the stars of this show were amazing. You have Gong Yoo, who's obviously the biggest star, who can, and Vicky and Melanie are going to take a moment to go, because they're like the biggest Gong Yoo fans ever. And I am also a big Gong Yoo fan, but not as big as they are. He's their forever love. And then you have Yoon Eun-hye, who played Eun-chan, and she's phenomenal in it and became a big star as well. Lee Sung-kyun, who appeared in Parasite and has been in a lot of other dramas.
My Mister,
right? There's the big drama that he's been in recently. And then Kim Dong-wook and Kim Jae-wook, who are both still working a lot. So yeah, it was sort of somebody who had an eye for the up and coming talent, the people who are gonna like be superstars in the future, and you know, put them in this ensemble cast. So what is it that's special about this show? Like, what is it that, because I think I can speak for all of us, right? Like, we all fell in love with it when we first watched it. I mean, I definitely did.
I'm actually the exception, because I think I mentioned to you that I'd seen it, and I came to appreciate it more after watching the docu that came out last summer about it.
Right, right.
I revisited it before this as well. And it's really explores the background and how it became very, and they didn't realize how popular it was going to be. And there's a scene in the first episode of the two docus where they're leaving the set for the day, and Gong Yoo is standing there going, how am I going to get home? Because they're like masses of crowds waiting outside the coffee shop. Anyway, so I that gave me a little more appreciation for it, but I'm actually really glad now that I took the time for this to sit down and watch it all again, because I saw it differently this time. And I'm actually now in the camp of, yeah, I would recommend this to somebody who would say, should I watch this? So I've come around to it.
That's interesting. What was it? What was it about it that turned you around? That was special about it the second time?
I saw characters differently the second time around. I think because I already was familiar with the material. The second time around, I was sort of looking at different things, and I was to recording this evening, I was also sort of asking questions in my head about what was interesting that was going on with it. What put me off a little bit at first, a little bit, is I don't really like the man girl mistaken for a boy in any drama.
Yeah.
Although I did think that Yunune did an excellent job of that. Like really excellent, because she's not, I find when that happens, the women overact, and she didn't, there was no time that she did that. I never felt she was a man, even though she was being mistaken for one. So that was, despite my reservations about that plot twist, plot line, I really did think she did a good job.
Yeah, and to piggyback off what you said, that was kind of my own sentiments in the beginning as well, because I originally watched Goblin first, and then I was interested in anything Gong Yu, so then I wanted to watch Coffee Prince. But like I said, the trope was not really one of my favorites. They tend to overact, and it gets annoying after a while, because it's like, just tell them the truth, you know? But for some reason, I just could not stop watching after one episode, and it just kept getting better and better. And I think that this was just really nicely. I feel like out of all the tropes that deals with this kind of storyline, I feel like Coffee Prince was just really done well. I don't know. Maybe I'm just biased, but I just felt like the characters, like you said, the actors as well, just really did well. They were able to make me feel their characters. They were able to make me sympathize with them and understand why they were doing what they were doing. And so that's one thing that's very special about Coffee Prince for me in that aspect.
And in the docu, the actors all talked about how much they enjoyed
on set. I watched that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
Lee Sung-kyun great chemistry.
Lee Sung-kyun says at one point, I actually wanted to come to work early.
Early.
On set early. And normally I'm not like that. And I think you see that. I think you see that they genuinely care for each other in this drama.
And it's not just the chemistry of the two main leads. There's chemistry amongst the entire staff of the Coffee Prince. Mm-hmm. And watching the documentary, you could see how they're like still best friends today, you know? And how much... I can't remember the actor's name, but her sister's boyfriend, who, you know, the big lump, the fact that he died in a motorcycle crash, shortly after the series completed, it still affects them so much to this day. And I don't know, I just found the documentary, which is just a must watch. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's also on Viki. If nothing else, to watch Gong Yu squirm watching all the passionate scenes, kissing scenes played for him. And then he's like, wait a minute, you're lifting up my shirt. That was in the script.
I know. And, you know, it's such an interesting thing for me, because like I watched this after Goblin also, and I didn't fall in love with Gong Yu and Goblin. I did not. I know.
He's got some surprise.
Audio. I have to tell you that Viki was appalled by what I just said, because you can't see your face. I really wasn't. And I got in trouble on Twitter because I said, I don't think Gong Yu is conventionally handsome. And I made a few comments about his face.
I actually agree with you, but that doesn't mean he's not attractive to me.
Sure, absolutely. No. I was converted by Coffee Prince. Like, just to make it clear, he is a sexy mofo in Coffee Prince. His charisma in Coffee Prince is insane. I was blown away. I really was. Because like I said, a goblin left me like whatever, because I didn't like the main romance. And then I watched Coffee Prince and went, holy cow, and now I know why Gong Yu's a star. I mean, he just burned up the screen whenever he was on. And it wasn't just that he's sexy and... You know, it wasn't just that. Obviously, he radiates sexual magnetism. That's what makes him a big star. But he's good in this. He's his performance. So it's subtle and heart-wrenching and moving. Like, for example, when he finally confesses to Eun-chan, which is the big scene that everybody's like, remembers, right? It's got an iconic line in it about, I don't care if you're a man or an alien. You know, I want to be with you. Let's take this as far as it can go. Yeah. And then, but then they both go home and he calls her and she's kind of overwhelmed in that moment and wants to get off the phone. And he tells her just a minute more. And he does the vulnerability on his face when he says it to her. You know, it's so new. It's so painfully, you know, he's still wrapping his brain around having confessed to her and thinking that she's a man.
I was just to say, rewatching it again, I appreciated anew how subtle and wonderful his performance is. I was screen capping a few scenes that I saw. Just even early on, they're just joking at a dinner out, all of the coworkers, and somebody says, he's my Chan. And he's like, no, he's mine. And then he gets this look on his face like, did I just say that? And I need to have someone in my life that looks at me the way Gong Yu looks at her when she's eating. The delight that the smile that he gets on his face whenever she's stuffing her face. It just so many subtle touches where he shows us how he feels and how he loves her, even before he knows it himself. Yeah. Oh God.
Yes. And there's a point in the docu where they're watching and Kim Dong-wook says, you know, some of these lines are really cringy. And if it were anybody else but Gong Yu saying them, you'd be squirming at how uncomfortable it was, but he manages to sell them.
He did. He did. I mean,
and he's playing a kind of a cliche of the Chaebol who's a cold, but even from the very beginning, you can see the vulnerability in this character that he's kind of a lost little boy. Like he literally plays with toys. he plays with Legos. They call them block toys, but it's Legos. And so, you know, even when he's being kind of an ass, you know, there's always that sense of somebody in there who is actually vulnerable, who's actually in need of love, who feels lonely. You know, and it comes through really, but he threads it through the whole performance. And
I realize everyone lied to him in his life, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't find out the truth about his parentage until later in the series. He thinks he's his father's illegitimate child. And I guess he had run away when he found that out as a late teen or something. So there's just so many people who have lied to him. And then when he has the scene where he confronts Eun-chan, like, no, you couldn't have been lying to me for months. You know, it's kind of like, not you too. You know what I mean? Like, the vulnerability. I mean, I was like, I've seen this before, but I'm crying buckets again because he's just moving me so much with how he gives us his pain. The actress is also very good. I mean, she's very good in her agony, but I think all of us would say like, there's so many moments, especially when you rewatch it, like that's when you should have told them. That's when you should.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
There was, okay. So that's, I was going to bring this up later, but we can talk about it now about what she did and whether it was forgivable. And honestly, I'm on the side of it's not forgivable, really. Yeah. Like the show lets her off the hook.
Oh yes.
But you know, I understand like why she lied at the beginning. She's poor. She needed a job. She's the breadwinner of the family. She's lived her life in a masculine role, not entirely out of choice, but because her sister and her mother are completely useless and horrible people and dump all the responsibility on her to care for their family. So I get it at the beginning. But then when she starts to actively come on to him while in the guise of a man, like she tells him, I like you. She kisses him.
Yes.
You know, she's flirting with him and yet not coming forward with
and seeing truth. That he's in agony about it.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just so many moments. But of course, we have to have 16 or 17 episodes. So we have to. out, but I kept thinking to myself as I was watching it, like, if this is a movie, this is the moment, and then you'd have the blow up and then you'd get back together. But yeah, it's just, it's so painful seeing how many times she could have come clean and be honest. And I think we can all sympathize. She was afraid that what would happen, which did happen, you know, he rejected her, he, you know, fired her, all of these things did happen. But there was other points when they had fights and he had left her. And it's like she kept saying, I was afraid you'd leave me. Well, he did at least one other time. And you could have told him then.
You know, and if, so here's my theory. And I think it ties into a bigger theme of the show, which is, you know, a woman living her life as a man, right? And that the freedom that that gives her, she's moving through the world in a way that it would be impossible for her to do if she were a woman. You know, she goes on this trip with these guys and sleeps overnight with them away, which would never have been allowed if she had been, you know, living as a woman. She jokes around with the guys. She gets to see Harem's ass tattoo. She hangs out in the locker.
She's appalled by when he realizes she's a girl.
right, which is hilarious. But you know what I mean? Like she develops, she has a relationship with these guys. They treat her as an equal. She gets to joke around with them. They're not condescending to her. And so to me, the real fear she has isn't really about Hangyul falling out of love with her. I think it's a much bigger fear about if I come out as a woman, what do I lose? I lose a lot. I don't just lose, you know, it isn't just about, do I lose this man I love? It's I lose my position that she occupies that gives her a role in society that would not be available to her.
Well, I mean, looking otherwise. At it through a 2021 lens, are both Hangyul and Eunchan gender fluid? Like they didn't maybe have those labels at that time. She didn't start dressing in a tomboyish way because she was trying to get the job. That was already who she was. Right. The very first scene we see her delivering food to a women's locker room and they are kicking her out because they think that she's a boy. Everybody thinks she's a boy. Her sister calls her Opa, for heaven's sake. Like even in their family, she's treated as a man or a boy. So she was already somewhere on that spectrum anyway. And I mean, questionable, you know, is the earring that Hangyul is that supposed to be a signal to us, and the kiss that he photograph of a kiss that he had with a man when he was living in America. Is that supposed to give us any kind of clues?
Oh, know, well, Hangyul is not straight. Can we just get into that? Hangyul is not straight, okay?
I was going to say that I feel like in some twisted way, they might have started off possibly wanting to make him bi or something. I feel like that was because it just, they laid the foundation for that. But I think, you know, of course, knowing the society, they didn't want to go too far with that because that made sense, honestly, because all that he did, you know, the kissing, I mean, he was definitely, I agree
with you, because to be really, pardon me for being blunt, but like when he is struggling about whether or not he wants to be with Eunchan, right, and then he comes to the decision before he knows her gender that he wants to be with her, He's thinking, can I wrangle a penis? Am I all right with like engaging with a man's body sexually? That's what's going on there, right? And the answer was yes. Yes, I am. But for real, let's like be real, right? And so
that's pretty much the moment just after that where he finds out she's a woman.
Right.
And we're just like, bam, bam.
And that's why I was actually, why I was actually really upset with Eun-chan also, because let's say Hangyul was actually gay, exactly, and this was his coming out journey. He was all like, I am ready to come out.
Exactly. And
surprise, she's an innie, not an outie. And that's it. And it's like he doesn't get to have that journey. Now, of course, that's not how they play it in the show. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of ethical issues going on there.
In a lot of dramas where they do this, where with the gender swap, it's a lot more, there's much less physical contact. There is a little, what's going on in my head kind of stuff. But we as an audience always know that it's really a woman. And the reveal happens before you get to that point of really having to struggle with your sexuality.
Right.
And
yeah. And that's why when they talk about this show being gay friendly or like progressive on queer issues, I don't really think it is very much.
Yes.
Because keep in mind also, I saw a film because I got into Kim Jae-wook, who's my current crush at the moment, not Gong Yoo, who plays... Sun Ki and the waffle guy in Coffee Prince. 2 years before Coffee Prince, he did a movie where he plays a gay character who is so overwhelmingly sexy that every man he meets falls in bed with him, regardless of whether they're gay or straight.
Yes, you do.
It's called Antique Bakery. It's really good. You should watch
it. Makes me laugh. Just
and so and there's like, you know, bedroom scenes with a guy where he's in bed with a guy and they're kissing and it's very passionate, and that's 2 years before Coffee Prince. So I kind of feel like Coffee Prince gets a little too much credit for being progressive, and people say, oh well, it was the times, and I'm like, well yeah, but in the time, well, they were making,
that's different because content. That was a movie in theaters versus,
well, that's true.
Yeah,
this is a show that whole families are watching together.
Yeah, so that's, I still think it gets over too much credit for the...
Yeah, and to even piggyback off of what you said regarding him kind of accepting that he's possibly gay now to now knowing that she's a woman, a lot of people actually, the criticism with that is they feel like it was unrealistic, which it's kind of, in some ways, makes sense because it really was kind of like a switch off, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like for him to reach that level of being like, I'm ready, like, yes, I'm gonna be with the man, I'm gonna, this is the life for me, and then like bam, you know, all of a sudden he's like, oh, I'm so happy you're not, it was something so much deeper than that, that I don't think it had to be more than that, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like they didn't really hash it out enough. It was a bit buried because it's like we never really got to, okay, well, like, you know what?
Yeah, you know? The emphasis was on the betrayal, you lied to me, versus examining.
Exactly. You know,
and their relationship was strange, don't you think? I mean, I think that they had a very weird relationship. It didn't feel adult. I mean, they're literally playing with toys together.
Yeah.
And they have each other in headlocks. And they're shoving soda up each other's nose. It's very odd. Yeah. It's not a fully, I mean, the grandmother was totally right to ship her off to Italy for 2 years and let her grow up, because they were not mature enough to be married. It was like watching two 12-year-olds in a way.
She was really young too.
She's acting like she's 17.
Yeah. Or younger, younger.
Right.
And you really see the difference when she comes back from Italy.
Yeah.
Yes,
she really has matured.
Yep.
Yes. And, you know, so I thought, so the whole thing was really, it was a little odd. I mean, it's very, like, you're so, how do I express this? Like, the romance gets sold to you because Gong Yoo is hot as hell in this, right? And his body is phenomenal, and they show it off to you at every opportunity, which I appreciate very much about this show. And
we didn't see that in Goblin, so
yeah. Goblin didn't sell me on it, but we can get into another, that's a whole other discussion. He didn't do anything for me in Goblin, sorry. Okay. I was about Lee Dong-wook and Goblin anyway. But yeah, it was, but so I think that's what sells you on the romance. But if you step back, and like I've seen this
show several times, actually, because I when I will like a show, I tend to rewatch it immediately. And so I've seen this three times at this point. And now that I've seen it a third time, it really hit me that this is a very strange relationship that they have.
I was just going to say, like, you're saying that they're like kids, which I will say maybe he's young for being 30, although I have a son who's 27 who doesn't play, you know. You know, I think that they're kind of meet in the middle there, let's put it that way. But also, one thing that I liked about it, and it's not just their relationship, but also Lee Sun-gun, his relationship. Mm. There's a lot of playfulness in both relationships. And I feel like so often we see relationships on screen and everything is so serious or just super romantic and weighted. And there's a lot of silly moments. There's a lot of, you know, playful moments, sticking stuff up people's nose or whatever. And it's the kind of joking and playing around that real relationships can have, or at least, you know, my marriage does sometimes. It's silly. And so it's like, I'm like, wow, I don't often see that kind of those kind of moments on screen. It gets a little bit much with the playing with the Lego toys. I'm not saying that my husband and I do that, but I'm just saying, as far as it feeling real, that's part of what made it feel real to me, that we were seeing all different kind of facets of these relationships.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Vicky.
Oh, I was going to say, I feel like that was also the foundation of their relationship in the first place, because by them doing all of these things, connecting, playing, and all that, is kind of what really got him to feel what he felt. At least, well, that's what they were trying to sell. I mean, I felt like, to me, I think he was attracted in the beginning in some odd way. He was always open to the idea of her, he. But yeah, like you said, I feel like that connection as well, the playing with the Lego, the kid, like, it made him, that was something he was missing in his life. And I feel like Eun-chan kind of was that person for him. And so that was kind of the idea of he fell in love with her, you know, through that journey together of them just being buddies. And so I think that's probably why that had to happen in some weird way. At least in my opinion.
You know, Vicky, I think that's really astute, because he's a lonely kid and he talks about it a lot, that he spent a lot of time, he was an only child, he was adopted. There was this really fraught relationship with his adoptive father. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he didn't really have a normal childhood. And so, you know, he's engaging with Eun-chan in a way that is making up for that.
Yep.
And I think they even actually explicitly say that in the show at some point.
Well, and there's the point where he decides to give up the New York job.
Right.
Which for me was kind of interesting, because it's like, okay, I've done all the playing and I've done what my grandmother has asked, and hey, I've taken on these new challenges and new responsibilities with these new people, and I really like this. It's like he really understands finally that there's something. I mean, I don't want to say it's not grown up to play with Legos, because I know a lot of grown-ups who do, and somebody has to design those things. But his, you know, his relationship with it is playing and toys, not really as this is my job, even though he's looking at it as his job.
He says, I learned that with the toys, I would be doing it myself.
Yeah.
And I enjoy working with other people, like at the cafe. And he learned that about himself, that he liked working in an environment with other people. Whereas if he had taken that job, it might have been more solo kind of endeavor.
Yeah, I think definitely in the show that his maturation is definitely that movement away from the toys to a real job, like a real responsible job where people are depending on him. Like, you have that lovely little moment where he pays everybody and then he doesn't pay himself, and he gives everybody their envelopes full of money, and he's so delighted to be able to do that. I think that's like kind of an indication of that maturation that happens in the story.
Yeah, and when he first takes on the coffee shop, he goes to his grandmother with this budget, and she looks at him and she's like, no, here's the budget.
Right.
And he looks at his grandmother, and at first it's like, oh, I can't work with that. but he finds ways to do it, and he finds the people to connect with to help him do it. And it really is him being responsible for all of this, given the constraints that she has laid out for him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How do you be creative?
Let's take a moment to appreciate the grandma. Is she not our everyone's favorite?
I love her. She's in a lot of shows.
Yeah, I adore her. And you know what I love about this? At the first time I watched it, I was actually a little upset when she realizes Eun-chun's a girl, and she does what you would expect a wealthy Chaebol grandmother to do. And at first I was a little upset with that, but then I realized that what the show was doing, because it plays with a lot of these tropes, and sets them up, and you think it's going to be what you normally see, and then you get something else. So his mother too is not terribly thrilled, and you have the scene where Kim Chung-wook, Hongi-shik, the unhygienic barista, is talking to the grandmother, and he says, "You offered her money? What are you, old?"
Yeah.
I love that one.
and you take a step back and you go, they're calling her on this trope. And the mother takes some time, but she makes an effort to meet Eun-chun and talk to her. And when he goes around the family dinner and says, "Okay, who's with me?" It gets to his mother, and she says, "I think I'm halfway there."
Right.
It's like,
right.
She starts off like, no. And she gets to thinking about it. And that's actually another one of the things I really came to admire about the show, is that people talk things out. They might fight like crazy and then go away and think, but then they'll come back and talk. Yeah. Or they'll call people on their business.
I also, though, like the grandmother, because I think to a certain extent, like, she set up a challenge for Hangyul to make the coffee shop a success. And she wanted to kind of push him. And I kind of saw her behavior towards Eun-chun, even though it was really mean, but it was a similar challenge. It was like, you know, you're telling me you want her. She's not who we want. What do you mean by this? But then when they pushed back, and they pushed back respectfully, not in a childish way, but just like standing up and saying, "No, this is what we actually want." And then she was like, "Oh," and she came back with the offer of give her a chance to educate herself, you know? So she actually ultimately was really fair to Eun-chun.
And when Hangyul says, "You want to separate us for 2 years? Are you trying to break us up?" And she says to her grandson, "Do you think I'm trying to break you up? Do you think this will do it? Like, really?
Is 2 years enough to do it? Like, and if it is, then you guys don't belong together." Yeah. Right. And so she was mean, but I didn't think she was gratuitously mean necessarily. I think she was, you know, she's somebody who had a purpose in what she was doing to prepare her grandson for his role as an adult and eventually to be the head of the family and the head of the business. So,
yeah. And her initial reaction to finding out Eun-chun is a girl is shock, and she does call her a thing, you know. I mean, she you know, what do you mean, this thing? She's not a boy or a girl, you know, like. But it's more shock, and then how she comes around, like you say, people are talking it out, and she comes to you know, what is it, Mr. Hong, you know, kind of explains she's just like you. She's having to be the head of her family. She's having to support her mother and her sister. And then that's kind of what she realizes in offering this, you know, internship in Italy. She's saying to Hangyul, this is what she needs. She's like me. I had to take over as the head of my family too. I understand she needs to feel that she can be independent and can stand on her own feet and not be dependent on you and your money. And I loved how the grandmother got Eun-chun, you know, better than Hangyul did at that moment.
Yeah.
You really got that need of, no, I can't be dependent on your money. What if you go away? What if you die? Then what will happen to me? You know, so like what happened when her father left and completely changed their family's life.
And at that point too, she's come to the realization that she loves this industry. She wants to be it, and she wants to be the best. And she's never, she says she's never had a dream before. She's only just worked to keep her family together and off the streets. And finally she has a dream. And quite honestly, that was the point where I was very impatient with Hangul because I thought, let it go, dude. Listen to what she's saying.
He's very immature.
Yeah.
He's very immature. I mean, you know, like
if we get married right now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you fall in love with him because it's Gong Yoo, but when you look at how the character's written, he's very childish, clearly. Especially, I actually don't want to forget to talk about the other couple in the story, because you have Han Sung and Yoo Ju. And the first time I saw this, I was like, you have this one couple who is like kittens and puppies and rainbows, and they're so cute together. And then you have this other couple who's in Scenes from a Marriage. It's like they're in a completely different story. And I could not understand why they were both in the story, right? And then, but now I think I'm starting to understand, at least on some level, why they're there.
For me, they're part of what the drama does in terms of setting up lots of parallels. So, and you have lots of love triangles as well that you that you're looking at from different angles. So you see all these relationships going on, and you get to compare the different. That's why when I hit the trot song, the Twist of Love, I realized that the crew at Coffee Prince are always humming or singing this song when they're working. And this is what all these relationships are. They're like people on a dance floor doing a twist and trying to, you know, dance together.
Well, what I thought was really interesting about Yoo Ju, who is hated, by the way, online. Like if you read about Coffee Prince, people always say, hate Yoo Ju, hate Yoo Ju. I'm a Yoo Ju defender. I really like her.
I hated her the first time I watched this. And I loved her the second time.
For one thing, I didn't realize it until this watch that she is also a woman living like a man, but she weaponizes her femininity to give herself the freedom to move through the world the way men do. She sleeps around. She cheats on her boyfriend. She has this career that it's an international career. She gets up and moves to another country whenever she wants to on a whim. She doesn't answer to anybody for her life. So even though outwardly she's very feminine, she's really very much like Eun-chan on another level. And it's not an accident that both men fall in love with both women, right? And it says a lot about those men that they fall in love with the women who do not conform to traditional femininity in various ways.
Yes. Go
ahead, Vicky.
No, I was going to say you made a good point when you said about Yoo Ju regarding her being feminine on the outside, but masculine a bit on the inside. I felt like that was in contrast to Eun-chan, who was masculine on the outside, but feminine on the inside in some aspects. And so if you bring up the fact that both men ended up liking Eun-chan, they were definitely attracted to her because of that feminist. She's not, you know, even though she had that masculinity, she was still very much feminine in some aspects. And so Yoo Ju was, you know, she was different. And so that's kind of what made it, you know, they, like you said, men don't really like when women are kind of, they don't conform to what they think a woman should be. I just thought about that. Like in some ways, that's probably why they were attracted to Eun-chan, both of them.
And both of them were attracted to Yoo Ju too. I mean, Hangul crush on her. So they're both alike in that respect that they're cousins and they both are going for women who don't fit in some way, you know, who aren't conformist. Another thing I really liked about Yoo Ju is she never, she was always kind to Eun-chan and spoke up for her. Mm-hmm. And she was jealous of her. She was threatened by her, but she never took it out on her. Yeah. And I really like that about Yoo Ju. Yoo Ju punched up, not down. She punched at the men, but she never punched at Eun-chan, because she recognized that Eun-chan was like a kindred spirit. Like I think she kind of understood Eun-chan, and
you know, like, for example, when they're trying to get Granny on board with the marriage, Yuju speaks up for her. She doesn't have to, you know. Even when she's afraid that she's going to lose Hansung to Eunchan, she doesn't like attack her or put her down or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let me just say, that was actually very refreshing to see, because a lot of K-dramas nowadays will have that evil second lead female who's just so ridiculously and it's just really annoying. But you see the difference in this drama, you know, you see a different second lead female who's much, much refreshing, and not crazy and mean.
I like the scene late in the drama where the two cousins, you know, Hangyul is saying, how did you put up with me crushing on your girlfriend for nine years, basically? Like, just give me a punch, you know, like, because once he had it on the other foot and he was jealous of the relationship that his cousin had with Eunchan, then he's like, how did you put up with this? You know, like, and I'm seriously, like, 9 years. I mean, a little bit, I was aggravated with Yuju just because it seemed like she toyed with Hangyul a little bit, you know? I mean, he was at her beck and call, you know, whenever. And so she just kind of toyed with him. So I don't have hatred for her, like, but I'm just saying she did kind of string him along for all of this time.
Yeah. Yeah, in the beginning, I was definitely like, okay, you're getting annoyed. So after I watched it a second time, like, I feel like that's when I understood the sentiments. But oh yeah, for sure, I was definitely annoyed with her.
I mean, she's manipulative.
Yeah.
But she manipulates the men. And in the society, the men have the power. Mm-hmm. So her power, her ability to seize her power and operate in the world in a different way is dependent on her ability to manipulate these men, right? And to play on her sexual attractiveness. So, like, is she like a nice person? No, like, she actually says it in the drama that she's not a nice person. But I like her a lot as a character. I wouldn't necessarily want her in like real life as my friend, maybe. Maybe I would. I mean, she was really nice to Eunchan. Maybe I would want her as my friend. I don't know. But I thought she was fascinating. And I definitely, you know, appreciated the role she was playing in the drama. Well, because go ahead.
Both Yuju and Eunchan know who they are fundamentally.
Yes.
And they accept what's good and bad about themselves.
Right. Right. And I think, like, they're both, and I found that refreshing too. Like, Yuju is not self-deluded about who she is. I think Eunchan a little more conflicted about it. Like, I think Eunchan definitely feels that pressure to, like, when she, this scene. So when she lets Hansung dress her up.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that. Yeah.
And the thing is, he's awful. Like, however awful you think Yuju is or whatever, but Hansung deserves everything he gets from her, because he was really manipulative towards Eunchan, I think, and used her. And took advantage of her vulnerability in a way that Hangyul never does. So Hansung is a really problematic character in terms of how he treats her. And he's not loyal to his cousin. He's never looking out for Hangyul, right? No. I mean, he never thinks about him first, or thinks, hey, you know, maybe I should be pushing Eunchan harder to tell him. You know, it served his purposes to have her only out to him and not to his cousin, because then he could work on her without competition. I mean, it's really messed up. No, I'm serious. Yeah.
Completely.
He's gross. I love Lee Sung-kyung. Like, it's the sexiest I've ever seen him in anything. He's hot in this, but the character is kind of gross.
Yeah. And you know, you don't realize that until you kind of like watch it again. You're like, okay. Because in the beginning, when I watched it the first time, I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's a cool guy. He's more accepting of her. But then I thought about it, like, wait, he definitely has a girlfriend. He's definitely, like, he knows. And, like, he knows after he knew his cousin also was interested. It was just kind of, I get what you mean. I get what you mean completely. It was definitely offsetting as a character.
Well, and the first time when Yuju comes back and she's trying to get back together with him, first he puts her off, and then they go to bed, And he's very blunt that he did it to get back at her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they deserve each other.
They do. Listen, they're perfect for each other.
I know. And then, you know, you could just see them getting divorced in 5 years.
Ugh. Honestly, I didn't think that they should have been together at the end. I thought they had many issues as a couple that was just a bit toxic for them, at least in my opinion. I think they needed separation for good. I think the drama wanted to wrap it up, you know, because they wanted everybody to have a happy ending. Yeah. But I really didn't think that they were all that crazy about each other like they claimed they were at the end, because all the crappy things they did in that relationship, I don't think.
But then they would be inflicting themselves on other people. So it's better for them to be together.
I mean, hey, I get it. I get it.
That way. So I also just wanted to take a minute, more than a minute, to talk about the other princes, because the ensemble of the people who work at the Coffee Prince Cafe, I think, is a really big part of why this show was so popular. You could compare it to Boys Over Flowers in that regard, where you have like a cast of really hot guys. And like, you know, you could just imagine teenage girls going, oh, I love Harem. Oh, I love Sunki. Oh, I love, you know, Minyeop. Yeah, there's one for everybody and you can like pick one. So I thought those characters, on the one hand, it's really fun to see them in the coffee shop together. On the other hand, I felt like they were a little underdeveloped, their stories could have been better developed. And it would have helped the storyline, because I actually thought that the story was a little thin towards the end of the drama. Mm-hmm. And if there had been more development of those characters, it would have helped with that.
Yeah, they definitely stretched out the whole Eun-chan and Han-yu
story thing.
Yeah.
And poor Minyeop with Eun-chan's sister.
Awful. He went, oh God.
Eun-chan has like the worst family ever. They're horrible, horrible people.
Goodness.
Like, he's such a sweet puppy.
Like, he is a sweet puppy.
And she's so terrible to him.
My favorite scene with him is when he rampages with the refrigerator. That was so funny. Oh, it's so brilliant. He's just like charging up and down the street.
He was such a, I'm not going to lie. When I found out that he had passed away, I was really hurt a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. He was really on the cusp of something.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And he just, like you said, he was just so sweet and this lovable lug.
Yeah. And watching the documentary and that little segment of just Gong Yu and them talking about him, it was just,
And all of them like practically weeping.
Yeah. Like,
and
you know,
I was teary.
I was teared up because it just,
It
was so sudden.
It's sad.
He couldn't feel the wave of Coffee Prince, you know?
Right. He didn't even get the full impact of it. You know, because like the other actors, I think, are still, they're best known for it. I think.
Yeah. A lot of them.
Yeah.
Coffee Prince is definitely their highlight.
For sure. Kim Dong-wook,
he does not get enough work.
Oh my God. I like him.
He is a terrific actor.
Have you seen Sideline? Have you seen his other drama, Find Me in Your Memory?
I love him in that. What's the actress's name?
Moon Ga-yeon.
Yeah. I felt, for me, she was terribly miscast. I think she's too young for the role.
Yeah, she was young.
And I kept thinking it's the same kind of role that Yoon Ah did in I'm having a brain lapse with Lee Dong-wook.
Are you talking about my? Touch my heart.
Dippy actress, and she does it brilliantly. And I was thinking it was supposed to be that kind of role, and it just, there was no chemistry, and it was just, but he was terrific.
Oh yeah, but, he's really good. He did great as a newscaster. I mean, I was very impressed when I watched him. I was like, oh wow.
Well, I really want to see him in The Guest, except that it's a scary, it's terrifying, and I'm having trouble getting through it. But I watched the first episode. He's really good in it. It's a horror show. And actually, Kim Jae Wook is in it too, playing a priest.
I love Kim
Jae. He looks really good dressed as a priest.
He looks good in a lot of things.
Oh my God. So he's so hot. I saw her private life, and I've been starry-eyed ever since. Oh my God! Yeah,
Ryan Gold.
Ryan Gold.
I love him and his suits and his little pants.
But he's also a really good actor, which doesn't really come through in Coffee Prince, weirdly enough. Like when I saw him in Coffee Prince the first time, I didn't think his performance was anything other than wow, that boy is really gorgeous, and other than that, there's really not much there. But now I've seen a few more things with him, and he's actually quite talented. So I don't know what happened, and that maybe the ensemble just overwhelmed him, or his part was underwritten or something or other.
I do think his part was underwritten, and the last episode suddenly tries to give all the coffee boys a happy ending, and it just happens so fast that you kind of go, wait, what? So it would have been nice to spend a little more time on each of them, but.
I mean, I came to appreciate Kim Jong-un, who's Mr. Hong, except for him eating his own snot. Like, what the hell with those scenes? Like, oh my God.
I could not stand that character. I had to fast forward through everything with him in it. It was making me ill. I couldn't deal with it. It was disgusting.
I did like his no-nonsense relationship with the grandmother, though. Like, how he called her on her crap and just was like the, what are you old? You offered her unchun money? You know, like, that kind of stuff. But
well, and my comment about him is he's like Unchan, and that his appearance is really deceptive. Like he's really unhygienic and gross, and yet he is this talented coffee roaster barista guy. And you have to get past the fact that he's really not terribly, he's kind of icky. and there's a point about around episode 11 or something where they're ending a scene, and it goes to one of those light boards outside the shop, and they have drawn images of all the coffee boys and the two managers, and his image is one of him picking his nose.
I couldn't get past the fact that he was preparing food.
Oh, God.
That's where and the thing is, like, there's a lot of gross out humor in Korean dramas, especially the older ones. And that's been an adjustment for me, and toilet humor. And that's definitely been like a hurdle for me to get past, because it grosses me out.
Speaking of food, I thought one of the funniest things in the documentary was the fact that Gongyu was commenting like, oh, look, her face is a little skinny there. That's she had to do all the eating on screen. Because you just think about how many scenes she's stuffing her face. I'm trying to just like, because it's like, you know, it's like, I have an opportunity to eat, I'm just going to shovel it all in before, you know, somebody else grabs it. But there's so many.
It gets played for laughs, but it's not really funny, because it's like, she's starving because the family's so poor and they're struggling so hard, and she's doing these really physical jobs that require her to, like, you know, ride her bicycle all over the place in the middle of in early hours of the morning. And so it's like they have a scene where they throw pork on the floor and she eats it off the floor.
And they call that Unchan-esque or something.
Unchan-like. But you know, underneath that is like that she's so poor and struggling. It is something that comes up a lot in the story that I actually did like, though. The idea that, you know, what is being poor do to you? What do you have to do? And you talked about this a little bit, Catherine, before the podcast, about the candy stereotype. So I think you wanted to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it's another example of what this drama does in taking those kind of tropes and playing with them, because the whole candy thing is the theme. It's from a Japanese manga, and it's a poor, pretty girl who works a bazillion part-time jobs. she, you know, she's really struggling to make ends meet. And she, all the rich boys fall in love with her. And there's another drama. I think it's,
well, that's Boys Over Flowers and so many other ones, right?
Well, and there's also Master's Son, where it's another, you know, sort of poor girl, rich boy. And that character actually says, "What do you think? I'm some kind of candy." So it's not that Coffee Prince is the only drama that tries to turn this on its head, but it's rare enough that it makes it interesting when they take that trope and you go, yeah, she's poor, she's perky, she's cheerful, she works like stink, and yeah, the rich boy's in love with her, but she doesn't want him to rescue her, which is usually what happens in the candy trope. The poor girl gets rescued. So I thought that was, for me, I really liked that, again, another example of the kind of things they do to take a trope and think you're getting that, and then, no, wait, look, we've done something much more interesting with this.
But there's just lighter moments, like that Han Gyul can't hold his liquor. And so you always see the piggyback scene. Well, she's the one that's carrying him because he can't hold his liquor. So she has to cart him home or cart him to her Taekwondo studio because she can't carry him all the way home. So, you know, I love, there was just little moments like that that got turned on their head.
Yep.
To understand.
Yeah. So I guess my final question will be, like, do you think this is a deserving classic? Do you think this is something that has, you know, that people today should be checking out? Like, if you're brand new to Korean dramas, is this a must-see?
Definitely.
Yeah, I would agree. And this is from coming from the perspective of not loving it in the first watch and now really appreciating what it does. The only thing yes, I would say I is I think it's helpful
to have seen
some of these tropes first. Maybe, but then that's like the Om Shanti Om question. Should you recommend Om Shanti Om to a beginner, or do they need to understand more about Bollywood? And I think in some ways, I think people will come to, yeah. And however, you know, like, I do not like Boys Over Flowers, but so many people, that's their first drama and that's what gets them hooked. And for me, it's like, if this is your gateway, then this is your gateway. And if you love it, that's fine. And you'll come to understand, and maybe you'll revisit Coffee Prince after you've watched 10 or 15 or 20 more dramas, and you'll see more in it. So it's definitely got stuff there for people to find,
and it has Dong Yu.
And it has Dong Yu. Yeah, that's all you need to say right there. I mean, to me, it's savoring the performances, because I do think it's one of, it may be Gong Yu's best performance. And I mean, I haven't seen all of his movies, but I'm just saying from the dramas that I've seen. And it was interesting, he was on a recent talk show promoting his upcoming movie. And he was talking about how whenever it's summer, he thinks about Coffee Prince. And whenever it's winter, he thinks about Goblin, because these two dramas were so important in his career. And it's weird for me to think, but he said he was burned out and really questioning if he wanted to continue on as an actor when he got Coffee Prince.
She was a cute and that
the love she got of a lot doing of it and how much joy. Yeah. I mean, you can see the joy on the screen of all of them working together. How much he enjoyed doing this particular drama reinvigorated him into doing his career. I also love that his mother gives him the business, because she said, "Why can't you treat me as nicely as you treat the mother and the grandmother and Coffee Prince?"
That's hilarious.
He has such a sweet relationship with them. And I guess he's not quite as affectionate as at home. I don't know, but I thought that was funny.
And I really want to hammer home what a job Yoon Eun-hye did in this drama. And she talks about it a little bit in the docu, about coming from, because she was an idol star. Yeah. Yeah. And in some ways you can understand why, because, and I mentioned to you, Alyssa, there was a series of skits on the program Gag Concert, which is a KBS comedy program, and it was around setting up like a drama, and you'd have all these stock characters, and at one point in comes the idol star, and the idol star literally reads everything from the script, including the stage instructions. So right. There is that kind of feeling about idol stars, sometimes merited, and you know they put them in a drama because it will get people watching, but right. Sometimes they're not quite up to it, and it's really unfair for those who are up to it or who could be up to it, because the drama she did previous, Princess Hours, she's not wonderful in that, but you can see how much she wanted to play Gonchan and how much work she put into it and how much emotion she put into it. And I really think that, like, alongside Gong Yu, that really she needs a lot of accolades for what she did in that drama.
Yeah, I agree. We kind of gave her short shrift because we were too busy fangirling the boys, but she had to thread the needle of being convincingly boyish and yet appealing enough that it's plausible that Gong Yu would fall in love with her, and she absolutely nails it. It's really, really well done. Just the way she walks and moves through space and holds her body and so forth. It's
and she never lets go of that thread.
No. And she doesn't girl it up after the reveal. So, which is another thing, which is probably a directorial choice, not her choice, but it's really great that even after they were openly romancing each other, that she's still the same Eunchan, which is great.
Well, and when she comes back from Italy, she's slightly more feminine.
Tiny bit.
But you still...
Plausibly.
For someone who's matured in a couple of years, but you still sort of feel the core of Eunchan there.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, because she still has that teasing, you know, of Gong Yu and everything. But right, like, her hair is a little curled. She's wearing a polo shirt, but it's a more feminine polo shirt. And she's wearing tight jeans and not her... she's wearing skinny jeans and not her normal crap, you know, boy shorts. Or crap, you know, crap jeans or whatever. But yeah, it's a progression. It's not like Sabrina coming back all glammed up or something, you know, right, from the movie.
Right,
so
right.
She did a fantastic job. I don't know how many people are watching Mr. Queen right now, which is completely playing this gender bender thing in a very, you know, very out there comedic, loud kind of performance kind of a way. And that's not what this performance is. It's so nuanced. It's, you know, I mean, she feels like a real girl. She feels like a real tomboy girl. And, you know, that's the thing. All of these characters feel so, so real. And the show does have such rewatchability. Like I was watching those scenes just last night of when Hangyo finds out that she's actually a girl and feels so betrayed. And I mean, the tears were just flowing again for me because it's partially just the way his performance is so good. But I mean, that's, I think, a real sign when you just can be so moved, even though you know what's going to happen, you know what the ending's going to be, all of that. But the moment that watching it and you're just still swept up in the drama and you're swept up in their emotions and the tears are just flowing and flowing and flowing.
Yeah. And that's how I feel about Coffee Prince. And to be honest, I think a lot of the older dramas that I've watched so far kind of gives me this nostalgic feel. I don't know. It's something about them that it's like, it's a warm feeling, even though I haven't experienced, you know, the storyline or the plot. It's just, I think it's just something about the characters or the setting or just how it's made. For some reason, it definitely makes me nostalgic and just think about life and think about maybe one day I want to go to a coffee shop. Like, it makes you just, you want that family kind of chemistry like that they had in the story. And so when I do recommend it to people, I do let them know that, hey, this is what you're getting yourself into, because not a lot of people are as open-minded, you know. Some people like certain stories. So I think that that's one of the dramas that I only recommend after somebody has
either seen something with Gong Yoo and they like him, so they're gonna accept it, or you know, they're very open-minded, because some people don't like that trope, no matter what. I mean, I have a sister who doesn't like that trope. Like, they just don't really connect with it. And if they don't give it a chance, they won't know what a gem it is, you know? So I it's one of those things that I recommend after maybe a couple, a while after the person has been into K-dramas for a bit. Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because I watched this pretty well. I mean, I've only been watching K-dramas last year. You're
pretty much open-minded.
I am very open-minded. Okay. I'm different. No, but I mean, I think though, for me, like, what sells this for me, first watch was the romance because of Gong Yoo, and I fell in love with Gong Yoo like everybody else falls in love with him when you watch it the first time. But then on the rewatches, it's, for me, it was about the camaraderie of the boys in the coffee shop and feeling like you could walk out your door, and if you were in Seoul, you could stroll down there and they'd be there cleaning the yeah, it totally feels like that. It's all like, I hung out there in college and knew all those guys, and they were great. And I love that it's filmed on the streets of Seoul. I love that people are sweaty. I love that people have visible acne. I mean, I know that sounds weird, but like, I just, they feel like real people that you could actually know, right? Instead of like, today, I like a lot of the dramas today, but they're hyper real. They're not.
Yeah.
No. When people's skin is levitating off their face because of the smudge tool that they used in post-processing. Wow. I don't like that.
Literally no pores.
No pores. Including people you've seen in the older dramas, and you know they have pores, and then you see them with no pores and it gets silly. So this is like why I wanted to do this series, because I do think like these older dramas definitely have spoken to me more than the more recent ones, which is weird because I'm brand new to all this. And yet I find that the older ones are more, I don't know, they just hit me emotionally.
I cannot wait for Boys Over Flowers.
Boys Over Flowers is going to be hilarious. So just for a preview for the people who are listening, this is part of a series. We're going to be covering Boys Over Flowers. We're gonna be covering My Lovely Samsoon. We're also gonna be talking about what we think are gonna be the future classics that are like the must watches, and including My Mister. And we're just gonna talk about why we like all the, you know, what makes a classic in these stories. So we have a lot of fun ahead in future episodes. This was wonderful. I'm so glad we got a chance to talk and do this.
It was wonderful.
I just wanted to give everybody an opportunity to let folks know where they can find you online. And we can start with Melanie.
You can find me on YouTube. My YouTube channel is called Perdaisy Reviews, but I don't talk about K-dramas there. I talk about Indian cinema. And you can find me on Twitter at Movie Maven Gal. That's where I post all my Gong Yoo love.
And Vicky, where can people find you?
My username is that Vicky Girl. So Vicky is spelled V-I-C-K-E-Y Girl. I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter with the same name. Just like Melanie, I do Indian content, but I also do K-dramas, K-pops. I mix it up a little bit because I just can't stop with one thing in life. And same, I talk about it on Twitter, K-pop, mostly on Twitter. So find me, add me, yay.
And Catherine?
And for me, in Indian movie reviews at totallyfilmy.com. And I'm on Twitter at K Matthews, which is K-A-Y-M-A-T-T-H-E-W-S.
And you can find me on Twitter at Bollywood Newbie, @Bollywood Newbie. But we also have a Twitter account for our podcast, and you can find us there at Daybok One Podcast or Daybok Podcast. Wait, I just said that. I don't remember. I'm embarrassed. Hold on. We're going to look real quick so I can give you guys the correct thing here. Hang on. Daybok Podcast One. Okay. Daybok. Still learning Daybok. I can barely pronounce Hindi, and now I have to learn to pronounce Korean. Anyway,
but you know what's funny is that I found that a lot of Korean words get stuck in my head more than Hindi words do, which is really weird in some weird way. I don't know how my brain works, but
it's opposite for me. I'm struggling.
A lot of phrases from K dramas have gotten stuck in my head. I can't even.
I go.
Yeah. Which means hungry. Like, there's just so many phrases that I just...
So anyway, ladies, thank you so much. And listeners, thank you for joining us. And stay tuned for our next episode. Take care.
Bye.